Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now! As President Trump signs a secret directive approving the Pentagon's use of military force on foreign soil, like Mexico, to target Latin American drug cartels, we'll look closer to home. We'll speak with Rolling Stone investigative journalist Seth Harp about his new book, The Fort Bragg Cartel: Drug Trafficking and Murder in the Special Forces.
From 2020 to 2021, there were 109 soldier deaths at Fort Bragg, and only five of those took place overseas, whereas all the rest took place stateside. Since then, soldiers have continued to die at Fort Bragg at an average rate of about one a week. This is especially concerning because of Fort Bragg's centrality to the U.S. military. It's the home of the 82nd Airborne Division, the headquarters of the Green Berets, and the Joint Special Operations Command. Most of the deaths are from deaths of despair, suicides, and overdoses, but there have also been quite a few unsolved murders, many of them related to drug trafficking in the Special Forces and the Airborne Corps.
And as President Trump threatens to bring out the military across the United States, we'll look at the most populous military base, Fort Bragg, where Delta Force is based, the most secretive black ops unit in the military, and where it operates around the world. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Israeli military has destroyed more than 300 homes in Gaza City and killed over 100 more Palestinians over the past day, as Israel moves to fully seize the largest city in the Gaza Strip and forcibly remove its entire population. This comes as the Associated Press reports Israel's held discussions with South Sudan about possibly resettling Palestinians from Gaza to the war-torn nation in East Africa. Health officials in Gaza say 12 more Palestinians have starved to death over the past 2 days, bringing the total to 239, including 106 children. On Wednesday, a group of UN experts accused Israel of carrying out medicide by destroying Gaza's healthcare system while targeting health workers. This comes as Al Jazeera reports at least 37 people seeking food and aid were killed on Wednesday, including 16 at an aid point north of Rafah. Across the border in Rafah, Egypt, truck drivers say Israel's continuing to block most deliveries from entering Gaza.
We came here to bring this aid to enter Palestine for our oppressed brothers inside. Unfortunately, this is the third time we have entered and we could not pass. Thousands of trucks, as you can see, hundreds and thousands of trucks, enter the Israeli side here from the Egyptian side. The crossing here in Egypt is open 24 hours. As you can see, it does not close, but the obstruction is from the Israeli side.
Protests were held in multiple cities across the globe Wednesday to condemn Israel's targeting of Palestinian journalists in Gaza after Israel killed six journalists, five of them from Al Jazeera, in a targeted strike on their media tent outside Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Among those who were killed, the most prominent was Al Jazeera correspondent Anas al-Sharif. This is Mariam Al-Saya of the National Union of Journalists at a vigil in London.
Anas al-Sharif would always have a slogan that the coverage will continue. And this is questionable now after the killing of journalists is getting more and more. We now are losing a whole generation of journalists. Journalists are killed, are aged 23. Whereas the journalists are aged 40, they are all killed.
In Israel, Israeli journalists protested. In New Zealand, a lawmaker with the Green Party has been ejected twice from New Zealand's parliament in recent days for criticizing other lawmakers for not supporting sanctions against Israel. This is part of Chloe Swarbrick's speech that led to her being ejected.
We can and we must uphold the Genocide Convention, which means doing everything that we can to prevent a genocide before it occurs. So, Mr. Speaker, I will reiterate my call for the government to pick up our unlawful occupation of Palestine sanctions bill and to sanction Israel for its war crimes. If we find six of 68 government MPs with a spine, we can stand on the right side of history.
In Spain, in Barcelona, hundreds turned out to protest Israel's killing of the journalists. Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, has announced plans to approve the building of more than 3,000 settlement homes in a move that would effectively cut off the West Bank from occupied East Jerusalem. Smotrich praised the E1 settlement project, saying, quote, "The plan will bury the idea of a Palestinian state," unquote. Smotrich went on to say, quote, "This is Zionism at its best, building, settling, and strengthening our sovereignty in the land of Israel," unquote. Palestinian officials condemned the plan as a, quote, "extension of the crimes of genocide, displacement, and annexation," unquote. This comes as several Arab countries have denounced Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for saying he's very attached to the vision of a, quote, "greater Israel," a term used to express support for Israel seizing more land in the occupied territories, Syria's Golan Heights, as well as parts of Jordan and Egypt. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned Israel may be listed in an upcoming report about sexual abuse committed by its armed forces. In a letter to Israeli officials, Guterres criticized Israel's treatment of Palestinian prisoners. He wrote, quote, "Cases documented by the United Nations indicate patterns of sexual violence such as genital violence, prolonged forced nudity, and repeated strip searches conducted in an abusive and degrading manner," unquote. President Trump warned Wednesday Russia would face very serious consequences if President Vladimir Putin doesn't agree to a ceasefire deal at a bilateral summit with Trump in Anchorage, Alaska, Friday. Trump's warning came after he held a virtual meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and European leaders. Zelensky's rejected proposals for Ukraine to give areas in the Donbass region as part of a ceasefire. Zelensky spoke in Berlin on Wednesday.
We talked about the meeting in Alaska. We hope that the central topic of the meeting will be a ceasefire, an immediate ceasefire. The U.S. president has repeatedly said this. He suggested to me that after the meeting in Alaska, we will have contact, and we will discuss all the results, if there are any, and we will determine the next mutual steps.
As the National Guard expands its presence in Washington, D.C., President Trump says he'll seek a long-term federal takeover of the D.C. police force.
We're going to need a crime bill that we're going to be putting in, and it's going to pertain initially to D.C. It's almost, we're going to use it as a very positive example, and we're going to be asking for extensions on that, long-term extensions, because you can't have 30 days. 30 days is, that's by the time you do it. We're going to have this in good shape.
Earlier this week, Trump declared a crime emergency in D.C. and federalized the police force, even though violent crime in the nation's capital is at a 30-year low. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has denounced Trump's police takeover as an authoritarian push. Meanwhile, a 37-year-old man in Washington, D.C. has been charged with assaulting a federal officer after he threw a sandwich from a Subway shop at a Customs and Border Protection officer. Videos gone viral of the man who can be heard screaming fascists and shame at the federal officers. A new analysis by The New Yorker magazine estimates the Trump family has raked in at least $3.4 billion through various schemes to profit from the presidency, dating back to 2017. Two-thirds of that fortune comes from the Trump's various cryptocurrency ventures. New Yorker reporter David Kirkpatrick wrote, quote, "I was struck by the frantic, almost desperate pace of the Trump family's efforts, as though they're afraid to miss any opportunity," unquote. The United Nations Security Council has repudiated a Sudanese paramilitary group's declaration of an independent state in parts of Sudan that it controls. On Wednesday, council members rejected the rival government proposed by the Rapid Support Forces as a threat to Sudan's territorial integrity as well as regional stability. The council also called on the RSF to lift its siege of El-Fasher, capital of Sudan's North Darfur state, where hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced by fighting amidst a growing hunger crisis and the spread of diseases, including cholera. Peru's right-wing president, Dina Boluarte, has signed a law granting blanket amnesty for all military and police officers accused of human rights crimes permitted during Peru's internal conflict from 1980 to 2000. Human rights groups condemn the move, saying it undermines decades of efforts to ensure accountability for atrocities committed by the government and its allies. This is Peruvian human rights activist Iselo Ortiz, Peru's former culture minister.
We are truly outraged by what we are experiencing in our country, deeply ashamed to acknowledge that we are facing an authoritarian regime that has no respect for human rights, that does not value not only the lives of its citizens, but also the rights that we have. So we are here in a way reacting to this decision to release human rights violators and the murderers of our relatives.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio has announced the U.S. is revoking the visas of a group of Brazilian, African, and Caribbean officials over their connection to a Cuban program to send doctors overseas to provide health care in the Global South. Cuba's criticized Rubio's targeting of the program. Cuba's Deputy Director of U.S. Affairs, Johanna Tablada, wrote on X, quote, "His priorities speak volumes, financing Israel genocide on Palestine, torturing Cuba, going after health care services for those who need them most," unquote. Italy's Coast Guard says at least 27 people have drowned and dozens remain missing after a pair of ships carrying asylum seekers from Libya capsized off the Italian island of Lampedusa Wednesday. About 60 survivors were rescued from the sea. According to the Missing Migrants Project, more than 32,000 people have died since 2014 attempting to cross the Mediterranean to seek asylum in Europe, with over 700 deaths or disappearances so far this year alone. Spain's government has formally asked its European neighbors to help fight dozens of raging wildfires that have burned homes, farms, and factories, forcing thousands to evacuate. The request for firefighting resources comes amidst a searing summer heat wave that's led to extreme or very extreme fire danger forecasts across much of southern Europe. In Arizona, public health officials warn extreme heat in Maricopa County has led to the suspected deaths of over 400 people so far this summer. August is on track to be Phoenix's hottest on record, with temperatures reaching at least 110 degrees Fahrenheit every day this month except one. In Alaska, a lake of rainwater and melted snow burst a glacial dam north of Juneau on Wednesday, causing the Mendenhall River to swell to a record height, flooding homes and streets in Alaska's capital city. Mountain glaciers worldwide are shrinking at a record pace as global temperatures continue to rise due to greenhouse gas emissions. In Illinois, Cook County prosecutors said Wednesday they will not bring criminal charges against five Chicago police officers who fatally shot 26-year-old African-American Dexter Reed last year in a hail of bullets. Body cam video of the killing shows officers from a CPB tactical unit in plain clothes firing 96 shots at Reed in just 41 seconds following a traffic stop. Officers initially said Reed was pulled over for a seatbelt violation, but he was driving in a car with tinted windows. In April, Chicago city councilors voted down a proposed $1.25 million wrongful death settlement agreement with Reed's families. And in Geneva, efforts to secure an international treaty to curb plastic pollution are in doubt on the final day of negotiations. Nearly 100 of the 184 countries gathered at the UN talks rejected the latest draft agreement as unambitious and inadequate. The proposed text puts no limits on plastic production and makes no mention of the chemicals used in plastic products. The plastics industry has been lobbying heavily in opposition to production limits, as have several powerful oil and gas producing nations, including Saudi Arabia and the United States. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, as President Trump signs a secret directive approving the Pentagon's use of military force on foreign soil like Mexico to target drug cartels, we'll look closer to home. We'll speak with Rolling Stone investigative journalist Seth Harp about his new book, The Fort Bragg Cartel, Drug Trafficking and Murder in the Special Forces. Stay with us.
A un amigo mío en la calle cerca de aquí lo dejaron abandonado, un objeto sin vida junto en la esquina. Yo no entiendo por qué los que deben proteger hacen lo opuesto. Los que deben proteger hacen lo opuesto, matan inocentes. Y ahora mi amigo no vive más. La cura llegó, lo mató y se acabó. ¿Qué culpa tenía si él solo fue?
La cura, the oath. By Chicano Batman, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the National Guard expands its presence in Washington, D.C., President Trump says he'll seek long-term federal takeover of the D.C. police force.
We're going to need a crime bill that we're going to be putting in, and it's going to pertain initially to D.C. It's almost... We're going to use it as a very positive example, and we're going to be asking for extensions on that, long-term extensions, because you can't have 30 days. 30 days is that's by the time you do it. We're going to have this in good shape.
Earlier this week, Trump declared a crime emergency in D.C., even though violent crime in the city is at a 30-year low. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has denounced Trump's takeover of the police force as an authoritarian push. At least 800 National Guard troops are being deployed in D.C. alongside 500 federal law enforcement agents. The Washington Post revealed Tuesday the Trump administration's also planning a so-called domestic civil disturbance quick reaction force composed of hundreds of National Guard troops set to rapidly deploy to other U.S. cities targeted by Trump, including Democratic strongholds of Baltimore, New York, Chicago, Oakland. The force would be comprised of two groups of 300 soldiers permanently assigned to the force stationed at military bases in Alabama and Arizona. This comes after Trump earlier deployed the National Guard and U.S. Marines to Los Angeles during protests against immigration raids and arrests by masked, unidentified agents who also targeted U.S. citizens when they were making their arrests. Rolling Stone reports, quote, one of Trump's biggest regrets from his first term in the Oval Office, according to former and current senior Trump advisors, is that he didn't use military forces and other federal assets to crack down harder than he ultimately did in the summer of 2020 on racial justice protests. Trump's Secretary of Defense at the time did not agree with the president's idea to shoot Black Lives Matter protesters near the White House. Meanwhile, earlier this week, Trump secretly signed a directive approving the Pentagon's use of military force on foreign soil to target drug cartels, especially in countries like Mexico. All of this comes as Trump is due to meet Friday with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Alaska to discuss a ceasefire in Ukraine, where the U.S. has also sent troops. Today, we take a rare look at U.S. special forces deployed around the world, whether we're talking about Mexico, Ukraine, Iraq, Afghanistan, or here at home. They're stationed at the most populous military base in the country, which was renamed Fort Liberty in 2023, until Trump's defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, directed the Army to change the name back to Fort Bragg, saying, Bragg is back. Fort Bragg is home to Delta Force, the most secretive black ops unit in the military, which carries out classified assassinations and other clandestine missions and is also heavily involved in drug trafficking, as our next guest reveals in his new book. Rolling Stone investigative reporter Seth Harp is a foreign correspondent who's reported from Iraq, Mexico, Syria, and Ukraine, also an Iraq War veteran. His new book, out this week, is titled The Fort Bragg Cartel, Drug Trafficking and Murder in the Special Forces. I don't think people usually expect to see, when talking about a cartel, the largest U.S. military base, Fort Bragg. So if you can talk about drug trafficking and murder in the special forces, begin with what Fort Bragg is, who the special forces are, especially Delta Forces, and who these dead bodies are that are turning up all over Fort Bragg and the surrounding area.
Well, Trump says he wants to deploy military forces to countries like Mexico to crack down on drug cartels there. But I think he should look closer to home, because there's at least 14 cases that I'm tracking of Fort Bragg trained soldiers who have been either arrested, apprehended, or killed in the course of trafficking drugs in the last 5 years or so, often in conjunction with those very same Mexican drug cartels. This is especially concerning because of what Fort Bragg is. It's not only the largest U.S. military base, but it's central to U.S. operations and special operations. It's the home of the 82nd Airborne Division, which is the United States' main contingency force. It's also the headquarters of the Green Berets, the Special Forces, as well as the Joint Special Operations Command, which includes Delta Force, which is
That's JSOC.
That's the most secretive and elite component of the U.S. military. And as you said, there have been some members of Delta Force who have been involved in trafficking drugs recently.
So you begin this book with the discovery of two bodies. Tell us when they were discovered and who those men were.
In December of 2020, two dead bodies were found in a remote training range at Fort Bragg. One of them was a member of Delta Force. They had both been shot to death. And the limited information from police at that time was that it was believed to be a double homicide from a drug deal gone wrong. The other person who was killed at that time was Timothy Dumas, who was a support officer, a logistics officer for JSOC. The other one, the Delta Force operator, his name was Billy Levine. And my book mostly is, or at the core of it, it's an investigation into who committed these murders.
So Billy Levine, Delta Force. Talk about the Delta Force operations, and you just mentioned that people are being killed in Fort Bragg, and part of the killing responsibility is the Mexican drug cartels. But those cartels, you talk about being trained at Fort Bragg?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's unclear who committed the murders of Billy Levine and Timothy Dumas, I've got to say. Certainly, we might suspect that it could have been some of their associates in the drug trafficking industry. I did learn in the course of researching the book and reporting it that Levine and Dumas were buying cocaine through the Los Zetas cartel in Mexico, which, in fact, was trained in the United States. It began as a joint project between the U.S. Special Forces and the Mexican government to create an elite paratrooper unit of the Mexican Army, and later went rogue and became one of the most feared cartels in Mexico.
So you're talking about a kind of Mexico Delta Force.
You could say that. You could say that. Or Mexican Green Berets.
The numbers that you're talking about of soldiers who have died at Fort Bragg, in a couple years over 100?
109 from 2020 to 2021. And only four of those deaths took place in foreign combat zones in Afghanistan and Syria. All the rest took place stateside, either on Fort Bragg itself or in Fayetteville, which is the town right by Fort Bragg.
So can you talk about, with this number of deaths, how does it compare, for example, to Fort Hood? And talk about what happens when you have this massive number of deaths. Who is held responsible, and how are they dying?
Well, so far, nobody has been held responsible. Fort Bragg is the largest military base. However, the number of deaths there on a per capita and absolute basis outstrips any other that you might compare it to. For example, we're well aware that in Fort Hood in 2020, 38 soldiers died. That led to extensive news coverage, as well as two congressional investigations, which ultimately concluded with the entire chain of command at Fort Hood being fired. Even though the situation at Fort Bragg is objectively worse and has been for years, so far, to my knowledge, nothing has been done about it.
You say that Fort Bragg has a lot of secrets, a lot of underground narcotic secrets. It's its own little cartel. That was Freddie Huff, who is the ex-DEA agent, talking about Fort Bragg. What exactly does that mean?
So Freddie Huff was a corrupt North Carolina state trooper and DEA task force agent who became a high-level drug trafficker in North Carolina. He was the connection between Los Zetas in Mexico and this group of special forces soldiers on Fort Bragg who were trafficking and distributing drugs in the area. And that quote was from Mr. Huff. And, you know, he was alleging that he sold, you know, hundreds of kilograms of cocaine to this group.
How many people die of suicide, and how is that dealt with in the military at Fort Bragg?
A shocking and depressing number. You know, the Army is well aware that it has a suicide problem. It has for a long time, but the numbers at Fort Bragg are really extreme. It's the number one cause of death at Fort Bragg by far. And many of those deaths are also drug related, regrettably.
So why isn't there an investigation going on? As President Trump tariffs Mexico and increases tariffs on Canada, talking about fentanyl, talk about what's happening at Bragg.
Well, on the contrary, there haven't been, not only has there not been any sort of reforms or any crackdown on this, but Trump and Hegseth, they make a big show of their support for Fort Bragg, changing the name back to Fort Bragg from Fort Liberty, giving speeches there, touting the Special Forces and the Airborne Corps, without really taking seriously some of these underlying and systemic issues, which are quite troubling.
One of the ways you use these murders to talk about U.S. presence in the military around the world is when you talk about Timothy Damas. You say he was a quartermaster with the Special Forces, and how he used his position, was it in Afghanistan, to bring drugs into the United States. Now, this is the guy who was murdered.
Yes, that's the allegation. Not only did, not only was he involved in that, actually, Timothy Dumas, before he died, wrote a letter, a blackmail letter. It was with the intention of blackmailing the Special Forces because he had been kicked out of the Army for his misbehavior and his crimes and had been deprived of his pension as a result of that. In order to, in a stratagem to exert leverage on the Special Forces and get his pension reinstated, he composed this document which purported to name the members of what Mr. Huff called the Fort Bragg Cartel. But before he was ever able to release that letter, he himself was murdered.
So let's talk about Afghanistan for a moment. Mm-hmm. Talk about the U.S. presence there, the forever war, and talk about heroin, drugs, and how they became so critical to the Afghan economy. And did the Taliban have anything to do with that?
It's really shocking the degree to which the war in Afghanistan had to do with drugs and drug production. It's an aspect of the war that was never covered to the degree that it ought to have been. Afghanistan, under U.S. occupation, became by far the biggest narco state in the world, producing more heroin than the entire planet could absorb. Most of the drug trafficking and drug production was being carried out and done by warlords, police chiefs, militia commanders who are on the U.S. payroll in a corrupt structure, which you could plausibly describe as a cartel, that went all the way up to the president of Afghanistan, Karzai and his brother, as well as Ashraf Ghani. During the entire time that the U.S. occupied the country, it was turning out staggering quantities of very high potency heroin, which